Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Margaret Marshall, and I'm here to welcome you to Backyard Labrish. And for new listeners, I want to let them know that Backyard Labrish was established to celebrate the rich culture of Jamaica. So this evening, I want to welcome all our listeners in line and those that are calling in. And just tell them to grab a chair, pull up an easy chair, your favorite chair for the regular listeners, and just pick out a nice comfy chair. If you're new, relax. You know that you can put your telephone on speaker and just chill with us while we labrish. Or if you're online, just, you know, you can be working, doing your work, or surfing the net, or checking your email while you listen to us. So for those of you who know what a labrish is, together to discuss something of interest to hopefully to everyone in the diaspora, and also to our new listeners that might not even be from Jamaica but have a love of culture, because Backyard Labrish was established to celebrate and retain some of our rich culture and interact with each other and really get some stories, verbal stories, so that our children and grandchildren may be able to go online or get on the internet and just find something about us, meaning the people who perhaps are living in different countries and was in Jamaica or was brought up in Jamaica during the time when things were different. So tonight we have a very interesting subject, and I would like to welcome all our listeners again. You're listening to Backyard Labrish, and tonight we're going to talk about a gentleman with a lot of passion that a lot of us might not be very familiar with. But for those of you who know, you perhaps know that Jamaicans are very, very passionate when they do anything. And we have really made some great contributions to the world in different fields, science, in sports. We're well known for that, in music. But tonight we're going to talk about a scientist who, you know, did a lot, only not only for Jamaica, but for the world in general. And I want to welcome my caller from 646-479. If you want to interact with us, you can hit 1 on your keypad, and then we will announce you. But anyway, tonight, just let me know when any of our callers want to interact, just hit 1 on your keypad, and it will let me know that you want to chat, you want to join the Labrish. So again, I want to welcome you, and I'm going to be giving you some information from one of our links on our website, which is www.backyardlabrish.com, is Pieces of the Past. And it's really done by a beautiful job done by the Gleana Company, Daily Gleana, and Jamaicans are very familiar with that. I know some of our foreign listeners might not know, but it's our main newspaper in Jamaica. And this article was written by Dr. Rebecca Tortello. And it starts off by saying, "We little but we talawa." That can be applied to many aspects of Jamaican life, not the least of which is Jamaica's contribution to world science. This article, which is the first in a two-part series, will feature Jamaican scientists. Consider the work, this particular one, we're featuring the work of Dr. Professor Louis Grant, who is a microbiologist, or was. He's no longer with us, but he did so much, you know, not just for Jamaica, but for the rest of the world. And that's why I'm saying, you know, Jamaicans are known to be very passionate about just about anything they do. Tonight we are celebrating, as we do here in the backyard most times, the positive things that some of our famous Jamaicans have done and the not-so-famous ones also. So we have two features tonight. We're really featuring Dr. Grant, and we also have our Person of the Week that really accomplished something very special. Anyway, I want to tell you about Professor Grant, and he has more letters behind his name that I can. It would perhaps take the rest of the show to tell you all, from MD to CH to MPH, DIP, BACT, and it goes on and on. And his period was between 1913 and 1993. Actually, he was born 1913. And I thought that was very interesting because my mother was born in 1912. So he was a microbiologist and a pathologist. And he was affiliated with the University of the West Indies for 20 years, where he achieved the highest academic honor, being named Professor of Microbiology. Now, he was surrounded by sciences from an early age. He was born in Vere, Clarendon, in 1913. His father worked in a chemical lab at the Appleton Estates, and most Jamaicans will be familiar with that. And for those of our listeners that are not familiar with our country, Appleton Estates happen to be where we produce the finest Jamaican rum. So, as a student, he showed promise and received the Vere Trust Scholarship to attend Jamaican College. So, as we call it, JC. So, we'll say he's a JC old boy, as we say in Jamaica. And he went on to Edinburgh University in Scotland and later specialized in tropical biology at the London School of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene. Now, he then returned to Jamaica, serving his country as a medical doctor, biologist, and pathologist. But now I'd like to share with our listeners what he really did that was so remarkable. And there I want to sort of tie in, you know, when anyone, you know, regardless of whether they're from Jamaica or any part of the world, but I know that when you're doing what you love and when you live your life with passion and when you do whatever you're doing with passion, it's not only rewarding personally, but you can really make an impact to the people around you and, in this case, the world. And, you know, when we as individuals even affect a few people in a positive way, you know, that has a domino effect that is positive because something you do or say may impact them so much that they in turn will do something that could be groundbreaking. So as I go through this evening's show, for those of you who might not know, I'm a very senior citizen, and I am very passionate about this particular project of sharing information, positive information, with all our listeners, and hopefully some young people will pick this up, you know, once we're not around, because the beauty of cyberspace is things are there forever, wherever they're floating around, and can be accessed at various times. And I'm so intrigued with this new technology that I am encouraging, especially the senior citizens or anybody with a story, to really use the medium to that it can be very beneficial to a lot of people. So let me go on to tell you what Professor Grant went on to do. For those of you who might not know, I can remember it clearly. In 1940, there was an outbreak of tuberculosis. I mean, even before that, you know, he started working on it in 1940. But even before that, as a young person growing up, I can remember that there were a lot of people that were affected by TB, as we called it at the time. They even had a special place, if there are any Kingstonians listening in, they might remember. We had a institution called, we would call Black Fence, because once people were sent to that particular medical institution, you know that, you know, it was like what they call the, when people have, they're in an advanced stage of cancer now, hospice. So Black Fence was like hospices today. And, you know, a lot of people, because they didn't have the vaccinations and the proper thing in the early days, you know, in the 30s and 40s, early 40s, it was difficult. And in a small island, something like that can spread very, very quickly and easily. Anyway, in 1940, Dr. Grant dreamed of a Jamaica with less disease. And he decided to focus on tuberculosis, a disease then plaguing the island. He asked the World Health Organization and UNICEF for a grant to begin an inoculation campaign amongst Jamaican children. Joined by another doctor, Dr. Lambert, he completed a mass vaccination that is credited with helping to break the cycle of infection and halt the spread of the dreaded disease. So that was really his first accomplishment. Now, during the decade of the 60s, Dr. Grant became a full professor of microbiology at the University of the West Indies, which is in Mona. Three diseases came to his attention. Two affected the island's general population, and one its horse population. And just as a sidebar, by researching this particular article, I learned something I didn't know before, that we had such a big horse population that it has such a very high value. But anyway, I'm not sure I'm going to pronounce it right, but for those, I wonder if my Brooklyn person is online, because he's our English major and usually correct me, because sometimes I get confused between my American pronunciation and the English pronunciation. And I see a raised hand, so I'm going to open up the mic to 646479. Let me just, you're on. Who am I?
Hi there.
With? Hi there, my loyal Vic. You want to tell the rest of the business?
And I'm not from Brooklyn. I'm from
the
Bronx, the popular Yankees, the home of the Yankees.
All right. Okay. Now, because I live in Atlanta and we don't have a winning team, our loyal listener from the Bronx rubs it in every week. So I'll give a shout out to all the Yankee fans. Anyway, I'm sure you were listening to the
yes,
accolades of
Rock
Grant.
Very interesting, yes.
Were you familiar with him?
Yes, I am
great.
Aware of him. Yeah.
Right. Well, do you have your pencil? I'll give you the horse disease. It's Lepidopterosis.
Say that again, please.
Lepidopterosis. Mr. English major, please.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the term, but
okay. Well,
we're
supposed
to
call
it
a horse disease.
Yeah.
Anyway, in early 1960, many Jamaicans began to fall ill with severe fevers. Now, some who seemed otherwise healthy soon died. No, this is not the horse disease. Sorry, we're not to that one yet. Now, through intensive research, Dr. Grant discovered that this disease was spread through contact with the urine of infected animals. Rats were immune to it, and therefore major carriers of the virus. Now, he was such a smart guy. Now, he decided that rats tend, this is how he figured it out, why the people were getting sick. He decided that rats tend to urinate after eating in kitchens, and this way people would consume food on which rats may have already urinated. There is no cure for viruses. The most doctors can do is make the patient comfortable while the body fights off infection. I didn't even know that. Did you know that, Leigh?
No.
If you get a virus, there's really nothing that can cure it. Your body has to fight it off. So that was interesting. Anyway, this particular virus, the spelling I gave you was the name of the virus, and I think it's leptospirosis, or whatever. If if not rejected by the body immediately on contact, would then enter the bloodstream, multiply, and possibly lead to death. Now, Dr. Grant quickly spread the word, cautioning against rats entering kitchens and the danger of leaving food exposed. The public education campaign helped to contain the spread of the disease, outbreaks of which have since been controlled. Now, here's my point. Not only was he, you know, astute in the actual doing of what he did, but he was always thinking. He was what you call a thinker. Last week we spoke about the dreamers. This week we're talking about the thinkers, because he had to figure it out. You know, why people were getting this virus. He couldn't figure it out. Then he figured out that it's got to be from whatever is bringing it into the houses or in the homes. So that was one thing that he was really credited for, because he was able to figure it out and then start the public, you know, campaign about trying to avoid eating any food that you might have left out that was uncovered. I'm sure in areas, and for our listeners who might not know, you know, Jamaica is very warm. We're a warm tropical island, and we have all sorts of bugs and insects. You know, people don't really have to be unclean to have things like that, you know, around, because we're always hot. You know, it's hot weather. So I just thought that was, he's really credited for being not only a scientist, you know, but a thinker. So anyway, now we're coming to the horse disease, Mr. English Major. And it is do you have your pencil or pen?
Yeah.
It's E-Q-U-I-N-E.
Oh, yes, equine. Sure.
Uh-huh, and I think it's encephalitis, E-N-C-E-P-H-A-L-I-T-I-S, yes, encephalitis.
Spell it again.
E-N-C-E-P-H-A-L-I-T-I-S.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how you say it, whether you're Jamaican or
American.
Yeah,
you're right. Mm-hmm.
In the mid-1960s, reports of a disease affecting horses on the eastern side of the island began to surface. Professor Grant instituted quarantines on the movement of horses, donkeys, and mules from that region. After much lab investigation, he discovered that the horses were suffering from a virus known as encephalitis, which could not be spread to humans but could cause great damage to Jamaica's horse population. He recommended further measures for containment, thereby preventing the spread of the virus and the ruination of Jamaica's, listen to this, billion-dollar horse industry. He also acquired a new title, the Horse Savior. Ain't that something?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this man was always thinking, doing research, and coming up with the right answers, you know, because something like that, if not, you know, controlled, could really be very devastating, because not only to the racehorses, but, you know, to the farmers and the people who, the regular people who need their donkeys and their horses to help them in whatever they do. So, you know, that's quite an accomplishment. Then, I don't know if you remember this, but also in the 1960s, Jamaicans began to suffer from a strange fever. Dr. Grant identified it as the dengue virus. Remember that?
Yeah.
And concluded after much research that it was transmitted via the mosquitoes. Now, the same mosquito that carried the deadly yellow fever virus. This led to another public education campaign and the beginning of a research effort to study on the study of airborne diseases, you know, things that fly and carry diseases. So I wanted to really talk about him tonight on our show, because as we've been, you know, talking about our history and talking about the passion that some of the old thinkers and old students had, you know, it brings to mind that from way back, not only have our citizens been passionate about being well educated, but so many of them went back, I mean, all tuned up with a passion to help the country on a whole. And I just wanted to bring that out, because I know a lot of the young people now that might not be putting as much, you know, into getting a good education because of all the distractions that are all around them, you know, Jamaica as well as other parts of the world, you know, because I know that here they're saying that less students are really taking science and math seriously. And prior to the crash here, most of that kind of experts came from another country. They came from India or China. That's where the brains or the scientists were coming from. So, you know, to have someone who was born in that period, who went away, got his education, and went back and did so much to help, you know, not just his patients or his students, but the whole country. And because of the details of how he came up with all these answers and what he did and the works that he did, you know, the different tests that he used, they could be used on other islands and, of course, become something that can be used all over the world, in Africa and all over. And a lot of times, these people don't really get a lot of accolades. You know, people just, even Jamaicans, don't know much about them. And I think it's very important for us to go back, because there's so much, there seemed to be so much negative news, you know, now, especially about Jamaica, that I wanted to use this forum to really celebrate and highlight all the positive aspects, with the hope that some of our listeners, children of the listeners, friends of the listeners, will find some encouragement in being passionate about what they do, and using what they do in a positive way to help other people. So that's what I sort of wanted to focus on tonight. Now, let me just finish telling you about Dr. Grant. In early 1970, he retired from the University of the West Indies and moved to Canada. From 1974 to 1977, he served as the Associate Medical Officer of Health for the Niagara Regional Health Unit. You know, that's in Canada. And from 1977 to 84, he acted as the Medical Officer for Health for another unit in Canada. Now, throughout the decade he spent in Canada, Dr. Grant became an active member of the Ontario Public Health Association and the Canadian Public Health Association. He became a community activist and an advocate for social justice. This was a well-rounded man. He gained increasing recognition and was eventually able to attract large measures of funding to fulfill his lifelong dream of establishing a public health clinic for low-income Jamaicans. And this is in Canada, Lee.
Yeah.
Isn't that commendable?
Well, sure, yes.
Now, he returned to Jamaica, bringing many international scientists with him who served at reduced or no cost, you know, on the island. Now, his he formed a clinic, the foundation of the International Self Help is FISH, FISH, opened in Papine in 1985. Professor Grant died in Jamaica in 1993, leaving behind a wife and four children, and ending a career that spanned 50 years in public service. He authored over 90 scientific publications in microbiology and public health, and received, you know, just as I mentioned, just tons of accolades and awards, both from Jamaica and all over the world. But I thought it interesting because I know that, you know, as you know, we had sort of a brain drain and continue to have that of Jamaicans who left Jamaica and are scattered all over. I hope some of them are listening. I see we have some listening on the board, and I want to welcome our listeners that are listening online and hope that this senior citizen will get astute enough in a little while that she can chat online with you, but I encourage you to chat with each other. If the chat line is open and it gives instructions as to how you can interact with the other listeners online if you care to. Of course, it's always your option. You can listen silently or you can use your computer to interact. Just the same way you can listen on your telephone. You can raise your hands if you want to be a part of the show, or you can just listen and enjoy. So I want to open the mic up now to our loyal listener and ask if he has any comments about our feature this week.
I just wanted to clarify that terminology that you made earlier.
About what?
Encephalomyelitis.
Oh, it's myelitis.
Yes.
Now, it's encephalitis. There's no M in it.
Well, I'm in my dictionary. It's got encephalomyelitis, and that's the virus you were talking about. The virus disease of horses.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Right?
Uh-huh.
That part of it.
Well, this article must be misspelled because I have it right in front of me. I downloaded it from the computer. But any scientists that might be listening online, but for the rest of us, it's just a virus, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It occurred to me that the myelitis part is almost akin to poliomyelitis.
Right. But the interesting thing is that was not the horse thing. That was this virus that was being spread by the rats.
The rats, yeah.
Uh-huh. No. I'm sorry. You're right. But it's spelled differently. It has a word in front of it, which is equine.
Yeah, equine means horse.
Okay, I got you. Mm-hmm. All right, so he became the horse savior.
Did you
know that they had such a big horse population in terms of dollars and cents? Were you aware of that?
Not in terms of dollars and cents, but I always remembered that Jamaica was very big on horses even before our time.
Really?
It was one of the manifestations of wealth in the country, you know, before cars and If you had a horse, you were on the way. If you had several horses, you were a masa.
Well, I remember the bushers always ride around
on
the properties on the horses.
There
were always a couple of horses.
Yeah.
But, you know, the next step down for our listeners who might not know, you know, because all our farmers and all of the people who lived in small villages, before cars, they would get around on their donkeys. So during this outbreak, not only was the racing population at risk and perhaps would be able to absorb more of a loss than the farmers. Wouldn't you agree, Lay? That who depended on their donkeys to take them to wherever they wanted to go, and to also, especially in the old days, take their produce to market.
To market. That's mainly what they used,
right.
The donkeys.
That's the transportation that they would use because...
The average people, put it that way.
Right. Especially in the old days.
Yeah.
So, and mostly in the country parts, because in Kingston... You know, it was always for the people who were peddling something in the old days before we had a lot of cars. It would be the push cart, you know, or the hand cart, as we called it, or the donkey cart. Speaking of horses, I remember the days when the bread man came with a horse drawn. Do you remember that?
Well, the bread man... At least my bread man came with a mule-drawn cart.
Yeah, it was a mule? It's not a horse?
Yes.
What's the difference between a mule and a horse?
A big difference. I mean, you wouldn't be able to afford a horse to do such, I can't say manual, but heavy-duty work. The horse is a delicate creature, you know.
He's more... sort of refined, I would say,
and
not really born for hard work.
Right.
Like the mule.
Like the mule, and even more so, the donkey is called the beast of burden.
So he can carry more load.
Right.
Uh huh.
And that was the means of transport to transport things in those days.
Right. It would be interesting. I have no idea because I have not been to Jamaica in many moons. But it would be interesting to know if people in the rural areas are still using mules and donkeys as a way of transportation. I don't think so. Do you?
It's very possible they do because in some of the deep country areas, the roads are not all that great, and the mules and donkeys still can negotiate up into the hills.
Oh, I got you. Like if the terrain that is rocky and
exactly.
That way you couldn't come. The cars, there's no roads actually.
Right. So there's a fair amount of that kind of activity, even though it's not as prevalent as way back.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they're still, as we say, country paths and still agricultural areas, even though at the reduced level as before.
And I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish, and we get together once a week on a Wednesday to labrish about something about our culture, the rich Jamaican culture that we are celebrating here in the backyard. And tonight, my dear loyal listener from the Bronx, the Yankees fan, I have... breaking news.
Okay.
You know how we are always the first, most times, at something. You know, it's amazing. Do you remember the bobsled guys?
Yes.
Was the first. Now, are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jamaica Musher completes 1,000-mile race.
I saw that, yes.
Yeah. No, his eyelashes are frosted, but he is smiling. Musha Newton Marshall rest after a grueling race in Alaska.
Was he related to your husband?
Huh?
Was he related to your
husband? I don't know. I don't know, but I thought it was so funny. So I was so excited about it, you know, because, you know, they're known to be so fearless when they have a passion that they will take on anything. Yeah.
Some people in the world were upset when we had the Rega Boys.
My goodness.
And
but
the bobsledders, right?
Right. Well, we have another breakthrough. I think he should be on CNN and on ABC and all of that. You know? Listen to this. In what is being described as a major coup in extreme sports, a former horseback riding guide has become the first Jamaican and the first black man. To take part in a grueling Yukon Quest dog race in Alaska.
That takes a cake.
Of course it does. Listen to this.
Stuff is not easy to do.
Listen, just like the 1990 blockbuster bobsled film Cool Runnings,
yeah.
Newton Marshall has crossed all boundaries in the freezing Alaskan outback, finishing 13th in the toughest dog sled race in the world.
As my friends would say, the man mad.
Well, as it said, we little but we talawa.
You know, that girl you quoted earlier that said that, we little, I think she wrote the book. She is, it's Yaga's sister's daughter.
Oh, wow.
And the reason I know that is because my girlfriend's daughter is married to her brother.
Oh, I got you. But let me read you a little bit, read our listeners a little bit about this special person. He said it felt like climbing Mount Everest because the race spanned four different mountain ranges. And along with the type of terrain came the wind that cuts like a knife. He's 25 years old and he was born in St. Anne. He saw snow 2 years ago for the first time. Snow. And 2 years ago. This is amazing.
This is unbelievable.
The conditions were so brutal, he felt like quitting several times. But like a raw-boned, courageous Jamaican, he kept on. Now, he outpaced 16 other mushers. Last Thursday, when he finished the 1,000 mile race after 12 days and 284 hours, his greatest satisfaction came out of knowing he had outpaced 16 other mushers who commenced the endurance race on February 14th, Valentine's Day. At the end of the race, 10 hardcore mushers had dropped out, and 6 remained behind the Jamaican, who saw snow 2 years ago. I have to keep rubbing that in. And not only has Marshall placed Jamaica's name in another history book, but having won the hearts of almost the whole city of Fairbanks, Alaska, he also has them in shock that a man from the tropics could endure such severe weather conditions. Isn't that something?
That is something.
And there are mushers who are 24 hours behind him. 24 hours, his manager said. The manager told the gleaner from a hotel room in Alaska yesterday. The manager was in a warm room where he's tracking. He added that even some of the dogs that Marshall started out with had to be dropped during the race. He started with 14 dogs and had to drop four of them because they couldn't stand the weather was so bad. So I just want to, you know, that's why I'm so passionate about celebrating, you know, Jamaica's culture and Jamaica's people. And they're a company. It's so exciting to me. You know, I look forward, and I hope our listeners are having as much fun as I'm having.
You want another breaking news?
Excuse me?
Do you want another breaking news, or maybe you're going to lead up to it? I don't know.
No, sure. This is a lavish, you know. I always tell our listeners that this is a relaxed conversation. That's what a lavish is.
Well,
we're not trying to, you know, we're trying to give positive information that we enjoy. So go right ahead.
The conclusion of the fifth test between England and the West Indies.
Mm-hmm.
The West Indies drew the test.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that they won the series 1-0. And in the last test, the Jamaican, Kevin Nash, who is the son of Paul Nash, who is a buddy of mine, and the unique thing about this is Kevin was born in Australia and is now playing for the West Indies.
Oh.
And he made his first century in Trinidad, where the match took place, even after the Trinidadians were giving him hell for playing, because, like, where did this upstart come from, you know?
Wow. Isn't that something?
But it is breaking news because it is big news because the West Indians have not been doing too well in cricket.
You know, over what period?
This is in the last 10 years or so.
Ah.
And this is like a breakthrough again, you know, and more so they played well.
Wonderful. What must be the yam? They must be eating some yams.
Well, who knows? Whatever it is, it could be even roti. It's fine. And today is an Indian holiday that's celebrated.
Oh, really?
Yes. It has various names, but just call it Holy Day.
Uh-huh.
And it's celebrated mostly in Guyana and Trinidad and elsewhere. In the past, I haven't heard Jamaican Indians talking much about this. In fact, I'm going to email a Jamaican Indian friend of mine in London now to ask him, to wish him happy holiday and ask him how come we haven't heard about this holiday.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very festive holiday, and they wear bright clothing, you know, lots of different colors, and it presupposes that everybody, you know, Indians have a lot of in their society, they have the caste system still, so that on this particular day, all men are equal.
Oh.
So it's really it goes for us too that we should, you know, neutralize our anxiety about being better than the Jones.
The Joneses are just
that idea. Then put everybody on a even for a day on the same playing field and be happy and friendly and all that. So that's my breaking news for the day.
Wonderful. That is great. But I brought up the yams because, you know, when Bolt did, you know, his remarkable feat. It was because of the yams, you know.
Yeah, that's what was said, yeah. They asked him, what did he eat?
Yeah, I'm telling you. So it's really, really, really so exciting.
As opposed to the swimmer, it was not what they were thinking, right? It was yams.
Right, definitely. So I want to just tell our listeners again that our person of the week is the first Jamaican and first black man to be involved in the Yucatan dog race in Alaska. And he finished 13 with a lot of seasoned, I think he was the only black man in the race. You know, there wasn't anybody else.
What was his name again?
His name was Newton Marshall. His first name is Newton, and his last name is Marshall. And he only saw snow 2 years ago. That's so cool. It is so cool. You know, and he talked about how grueling it is. 1,000 miles. 1,000 miles. So how many times, you know, he thought about giving up because it was so grueling, but he just kept on. He just kept on. And there again, excuse me, you're talking about passion. You know, when anything is driven by passion or done with passion, I mean, you can do miracles, really do miracles, because this was really quite a feat. And so I just want to celebrate Mr. Marshall this evening and to inform our listeners that we are here each week on Wednesday at 8 o'clock and invite you to join the Labrish. Come bring your news or give us some comments about what we are sharing with you. And if you would like to join the Labrish, just hit 1 on your keypad. And I'll open up the mic so that your voice can be heard. And for those of our listeners online and even calling in that might be a little shy, you never know. You know, once you're talking to the world, but they're not seeing you. So it's just like talking to a friend. And when you're in the backyard, it's always warm and cozy, and we have a nice breeze coming in. If you grew up in Jamaica, you know that in the evening time, we have the trade winds that blow over the island, and we just chill and relax. As the young folks are saying, no, we're chilling. But we pull up our chairs, and we will talk about current events or about just fun things, or we just chill. So that's what we do here every Wednesday. And we hope you enjoy us and will go to our website and become part of our community. So I see we have a couple of minutes left. Leigh, do you have some parting words?
No. I found your discussion tonight very informative, and it only goes to show that you can't keep the Jamaican down. No matter where he goes, no matter what he does.
Right.
A while back, I was told that the first government engineer in New York was a Jamaican.
Oh,
and
really?
I have to look it up and find out the name for you.
Okay, please do, because you know we're bringing to the forefront a lot of our Jamaicans that have really done something spectacular, but the rest of us that are, you know, scattered all over the world might not know about them. And it's just, you know, inspiring to me, and I hope that some of our other listeners who are listening now or may tune in later will find this information inspiring, because I believe that the more positive news that we spread and we broadcast, it will, you know, bring some positive vibes, and you never know when it will touch someone or give someone an idea or encourage someone in some way. So that's what we do here in the backyard, and we hope that you enjoy it. So, Leigh, beg your pardon?
Yes, go ahead.
No, I'm saying that next week we will have some interesting Labrish, and we ask the people that are listening or online or on the phone to tell their friends about what we're doing, because, you know, we would like to increase our listenership, and we also invite you to become a part of our community in the backyard, because we are encouraging, especially our senior citizens, to utilize the technology that's now available to us. Because I think I mentioned before, I was the victim of a fire. So I know that, you know, a lot of times we have information that we think we will pass on to the next generation, but it's never safe unless it's in cyberspace, because that's the new vault. That's the new vault, right, Leigh?
Yeah, a new medium, and, you know, who knows, by the time we get too comfortable in this medium, there will be another medium opening up, because that's the nature of the beast in technology.
Right.
You know, your reel-to-reel tape mm-hmm. went out with Noah's Ark, and now you have... You went from the tape medium to the cassette to the CD,
mm-hmm.
and on it goes.
Well, don't forget the 8-track before that. Do you remember the big
yes,
track?
Yes,
I have
a lot of those, and I can't even use them.
Right, and then we went, as you said, to the smaller ones.
Yeah.
And what's funny is that when I got my last car, I mean, I went in it with my little cassette, only to find there was no place to put it. The house was a little afraid.
When I bought my last car, I asked Chrysler to be sure that I have a cassette along with all the other garbage that they have, because I need the cassette.
So now you have a cassette and a CD player? You have both?
Yes. Oh,
really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I'm telling you, the first time I got in my car with my cassette, and I'm looking, I thought I just couldn't find it. Only for one of my children to announce to me that, oh, you know, that's old school.
Yeah.
And now it's the CD. So
specifically, and in some types of cars, they don't even bother with it anymore.
Yeah, well, mine only have the CD. So we're saying that to say, but, you know, I think that they'll just be upgrading the method at which you use cyberspace.
Yeah, well, the reason I mentioned that is that a lot of people who started out with these formats and still have, let's say, a library of material, they're able to transport it from that medium to the present medium.
Right,
you
right.
Know? So there is hope one way or the other. The point is that you have to get into the backyard and establish yourself and be archived.
Right.
And
you'll be there forever.
Forever.
Right, because, you know, I was watching something on the news the other day, and they were speaking that some private citizen found some YouTube film that was something that was there that was done years and years ago that is going to be used, you know, against somebody. And I'm sure they didn't even remember that it was there or whatever. So these things, once it goes out there, it never goes away.
Yeah, well, a lot of times, too, the technology is, quote-unquote, not marketable. So even it may be cutting edge, they put it away until another time.
Right,
you know,
right.
Even though it may be newer or more... modern than
user-friendly.
Yeah, so who knows?
Speaking of that, you know, we there's even a different set of phrases that are perhaps new to some of the senior citizens, but, you know, it's part of the language now. You know, I remember when a mouse was something you didn't handle.
Yeah.
Right?
The most might have been, you know, people would be afraid thinking
right,
it.
Right, that's right. It got women jumping up on chairs and screaming.
Yeah.
But now, you know, you're using it. If you don't know how to use your mouse, then, you know, you cannot interact. But I'm just kidding around, but I do want to encourage our senior citizens to really it's not as difficult as it may look or seem. And there are so many ways that people can get comfortable with it. You know, you can go to the library, or they have a lot of classes that are teaching senior citizens to get comfortable with cyberspace, because it's not as intimidating as it may seem. And once you get the hang of it, you know, you don't have to be doing complicated things. They're making a lot of the applications a lot more user-friendly than they were 10, 15 years ago. So my senior friends, you have two senior on the line. My favorite fan from the Bronx, home of the Yankees, is
right,
a senior Jamaican, and so am I. And so we encourage you to participate. For some of you younger fans that might be on, encourage your mama or your grandma or your nana or whoever to come tell us a story about when they were growing up, or fun things they used to do, or things that were important to them, or things they remembered. Because, you know, Leigh, I was thinking, someone asked about the Mento on one of our calls.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's not many people that could give a verbal description of the Mento that actually danced it. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
And that's why I am so passionate about breaking through to some of the older, the more senior citizens to share some of their stories with us. Because as we mentioned last week on our show, there's over 1,000 of them living in Jamaica that are over 100 years old. And I'm sure they have some fantastic stories of back in the day. So those of us who are not 100, but we're getting up there, we need to start documenting our stories now. So join us in the backyard. Come sit, chill out, and listen to the Labrys. So we're going to be signing off in a couple of minutes and invite you to come back with us next week, because we're going to have some more things to labrish about, because Jamaica is so rich with culture and stories that, you know, we can be talking for the next 100 years. So, Leigh?
On that note, I'll say good night from the Bronx.
Okay, and good night from the backyard. Thank you for listening. Oh, I see a hand raised. We have a couple of more minutes. So our listener at 941, you're on. Good evening.
Good evening. It's me.
Oh, it's you, our late co-host.
No.
Where have you been? I was wondering.
No. Look, my car clock had one thing, and my phone, I had another phone, which I didn't have the phone number in, and I was like, this is so crazy. Okay, but I'm going to make sure I rush home and get on the call and let everybody know I'm here.
Yeah, great. My number is in my mobile phone, so I can use it almost anywhere to get onto the show.
As Margaret will tell you, I've had mobile phone challenges, so I got another phone.
I remember the one at the airport, yes.
Yeah.
Well, Donna, we're going to give you a chance to say goodbye. We talked about our very special scientist who contributed to, you know, biology and from Jamaica, and the breakthrough of our first Jamaican, Musha.
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 Musha. You know, are you familiar with the Mushas?
No.
Oh, that's the dog sled race in Alaska.
Oh, okay, a musher. Okay, I got you.
Okay.
It's the accent.
Musha.
Jamaican musha.
We had the Jamaican bobsled guys. Now we have a Jamaican musha.
Oh, okay. Wow. Isn't that something? Boy, I tell you, Jamaican people just juggle everywhere.
Oh, yes. And guess what, Donna?
What?
He only saw snow 2 years ago. First time he saw snow.
Isn't that something?
It sure is.
Wow.
So he completed a 1,000 mile race, and there were 24 people behind him.
Wow, okay.
The people were 24 hours behind him. There were 12 people, 24
hours
behind him. Because it's a timed thing, you know.
Over
mountain ranges, and, you know, he wore out four dogs.
Wow.
But he kept going.
So how many people participated, and what did he place?
13th.
Oh, okay.
He came in 13th.
Wow.
But, you know, he's only 25 years old.
Oh, okay.
So,
What prompted him to, where is he, in Alaska, or where is he?
In Alaska. Yeah, in Alaska.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what prompted him to do it?
Well, actually, he was taking care of, he was a horse man. He was a guide. Not in Jamaica. I mean, not in Alaska. He was affiliated with somebody who asked him to come to Alaska and take care of some dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And for the company, and then after that, he started carrying people around. Apparently, he's been there for a little while in Alaska.
Wow.
So he decided to enter the race.
Okay, well, good for him.
Yes.
So,
I said the man mad.
I was wondering if he, you know, like said, okay, I'm going back to Jamaica now where it's nice and warm.
Oh, my goodness.
Or did he say, okay, I'm gearing up for the next, you know, race, to prepare for that? I just wonder,
that's what they do, you know. Once they go in, I remember this, there was a female musha who won the race, the last time I can recall that she won, she was winning for 8 years straight.
Wow!
So, you know, it's a lifetime thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know how he's gonna figure that one out. Maybe we'll go back to Jamaica after this first race.
You know, the race took 12 days and 284 hours.
And don't they have to like stay in, you know, with pop up a tent type of thing? I mean,
oh, yes. They go over mountain ranges, and they're alone with the dogs.
Yeah.
They don't really have a team.
Yeah.
This is a very big accomplishment for 25 years old.
Okay, so from the Bronx, good night.
Okay, good night. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
So, Donna, good night.
All right, good night.
We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in, and we hope to see you next week in the backyard.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye.